Hi, this is Eileen, and I'll be reading from the Decatur Herald and Review for Friday, January 27th, 2017. Starting with the headline article, Attorney General Madigan files petition to stop state worker pay. From Decatur. A state budget deal faced increased urgency Thursday after Attorney General Lisa Madigan petitioned a court to stop state employees from being paid. The motion, filed in St. Clair County Circuit Court, would keep employees from receiving paychecks unless a budget agreement can be reached. A judge had previously ruled state workers could continue being paid throughout a standoff between Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and the Democrat-controlled legislature, although nobody knew that the impasse would last as long as it has, said Rich Miller, founder of CEO of the Capital Facts, a daily newspaper about Illinois government. The state has been without a complete budget since July 2015. Miller was speaking Thursday evening during the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce annual meeting held at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel, shortly after receiving information about the filing. The lawsuit puts pressure on Rauner and House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat of Chicago, the Attorney General's father, to come together on a budget agreement by the end of February, Miller said. Lisa Madigan's office is seeking to have the court's pay order lifted January 28th, giving Rauner and lawmakers additional time to enact appropriations legislation and thereby ensure that state employees will continue to receive their wages, according to the filing. We could be seeing the end of this stalemate, Miller said. I would have given it a 50-50 chance. We need more than that, and we'll be in trouble like nobody has ever seen in the history of history. Illinois is already a national and in many ways an international embarrassment. Rauner spokeswoman Catherine Kelly responded to the lawsuit by expressing her disappointment. It's disappointing to see any move to stop employee pay and disrupt government services, especially now as the state is on the verge of a bipartisan agreement to enact a balanced budget with changes to the system, Kelly said. This filing seeks to directly harm thousands of employee families and even more who rely on our dedicated state workers every day. Kelly said the governor urges the attorney general to reconsider the filing. Rauner is scheduled to deliver his budget proposal to the General Assembly on February 15th. He delivered a relatively upbeat State of the State address Wednesday, in which he called for bipartisan compromise to end the impasse. When the standoff began, unions representing state workers sued to ensure that they would continue being paid, arguing that cutting off their pay would be an unconstitutional violation of their contracts. Lisa Madigan's office urges in the latest filing that the state is violating the Illinois Constitution by paying workers without appropriations approved by the General Assembly and signed by the governor. The filing notes that the stopgap spending plan that funded state operations from July through December didn't include pay for state workers because of the earlier court order. Lisa Madigan, a Democrat, said in a written statement that the order has removed much of the urgency for the legislature and the governor to act on the budget. She went on to say an Illinois Supreme Court ruling this summer undercuts the union argument in the case. The Illinois Supreme Court overruled the sole legal basis for the St. Clair County Court's order to allow state operations to continue without an appropriation, Madigan said. With a new legislative session now underway, this is an appropriate time to ask the Circuit Court to reconsider this order in light of the changes in the law. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employee Council 31, one of the unions that brought the lawsuit, pointed the blame for the larger situation at Rauner, with whom the union is engaged in a bitter contract battle. Members are scheduled to begin voting Monday on whether to authorize a strike for the first time in Illinois history. Rauner created this hostage situation by refusing to enact a fully funded budget unless his unrelated personal demands were enacted first, spokesman Anders Lindahl said. He should put aside those demands and do his job to work together toward a budget without preconditions. Still, AFSCME is shocked and extremely disappointed with Madigan for filing the motion, Lindahl said. Despite all the chaos in the state government in the past 2 years, the people of Illinois have been able to count on state employees being on the job to serve them, he said. The last thing Illinois needs is the further instability that blocking state payroll could cause. Miller, for his part, said Lisa Madigan, is likely going to win the case because the Supreme Court already ruled on it. If not in St. Clair County, Miller said she would win it on an appeal. He said the issues show a main reason why a budget deal needed to be reached. It's kind of hard to run a state without employees, Miller said. The state needs to pay its bills as a backlog approaching $24 billion is expected to pile up in the next 2 years, Miller said. The current backlog is about $11 billion, he said. On the state level, $24 billion is a rounding error, Miller said. On the state level, $24 billion is a very big deal. This is going to continue to get worse as costs rise with each passing day. The state's unemployment rate could continue to rise and its bond rating go through the floor, as Miller said it currently sits just notches above junk status. The invitation for Miller to speak at the chamber meeting proved timely for somebody who understands Illinois politics so well, said Greg Webb, chairman of the group's advocacy committee. We'll see what happens, Webb said. Businesses want certainty and predictability. With this, the level of uncertainty has caused apprehension. It would be a good thing to bring certainty. Webb said Miller was effective as he could mix insightful information with wit and humor. The next article, Milken Students Testing New Scientific Business Ideas, written by Chris Lisvardi. Indicator, a group of Milken University students is learning what it takes to develop a business that changes the outlook for the future. The students are bringing a mix of interests in science and business to projects that are in the running to compete in different contests. They're looking to refine their ideas by continuing to work with business partners 300 below Indicator as they advance deeper into the competition. One of the students' businesses is Blue Solar, which was named a finalist in Clean Energy Trust for the Clean Tech University Prize, sponsored by the U.S. Department of Energy. As a finalist, Blue Solar is one of 8 companies in the Midwest competing for a chance to win $50,000. The company is looking for ways to improve the performance of solar panels by testing cryogenic treatment options that involve the use of liquid nitrogen. We are looking at being able to implement it into the market, said Estefano Martinez, a sophomore management major from the Indianapolis area, who is CEO of Blue Solar. One of the driving factors is it will truly have an impact on society. Part of the testing is trying to improve the efficiency of the process in an economically viable manner, which is part of why Hunter Summers said working with 300 Below is beneficial. We've seen improvements and good results, said Summers, a junior physics major from Bloomington. We're looking for explanation as to why things are happening, so we're looking forward to finding out more. By doing the research, the students hope to ultimately understand how the process works in order to implement future solutions, Martinez said. Those solutions can affect society in a crucial way moving forward. Pete Paulin appreciates the effort the students are putting into their work. They're making things happen, said Paulin, 300 Below's CEO. It's part of a great recipe for success. Paulin said working with the students enables the company to move forward with testing ideas it wouldn't otherwise be able to do. The business has added staff because of the progress that is being made in testing clean energy projects, he said. We're able to lift our ideas up and move forward, Paulin said. Blue Solar is just one of the projects Millikan students are working on, said Casey Watson, an associate professor of physics and astronomy. Others under the Blue Cryogenics umbrella could or do include wind, nuclear, and other green energy sources where Watson said materials can be tested for corrosion resistance. Blue Solar is the most developed of the projects, Watson said. Cryogenic treatment can improve the strength of materials, Watson said, while helping the students test materials as part of a wind turbine study. Paulin said strong materials placed on wind turbines that can be 300 feet in the air can result in a significant cost savings by lasting up to 3 times longer while providing power for the U.S. electric grid. In addition to being a finalist in the Clean Energy Trust Contest, Blue Solar is a semifinalist in the Startup World Cup held in Silicon Valley, said Julie Shields, the Millikan Center for Entrepreneurship director. Science and technology businesses are becoming increasingly important because of its global impact, said Shields, who added that's part of why Millikan has been focusing on providing training for students interested in those type of ventures. It's opportunities with global applications to solve problems we deal with every day, Shields said. We're trying to break new ground. As part of being named a finalist, the Millikan students are being mentored by experts from Clean Energy Trust's network and its staff to refine their business models and promotion. The final pitch showcase will be February 9th at the University of Chicago. Other finalists include teams from University of Minnesota, Michigan State University, Northwestern University, the University of Michigan, Case Western Reserve University, the Illinois Institute of Technology, and the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Regardless of the outcome of the contest, the experience is proving valuable to the students. We're hoping for some bright futures, Summers said. Martinez said they're gaining experience that will be applicable to working on future business opportunities. The next article, Cat Swings to Lose as Contract Talks Move Ahead, by Tony Reed, Indicator. Caterpillar Incorporated announced a mixed bag of fourth quarter and full year 2016 results Thursday, the numbers being delivered amid crucial contract negotiations with its Decatur plant union. Union Auto Workers Local 751, representing the skilled workers who build the giant off-road mining trucks Indicator and other equipment, began local bargaining on their new contract January 18th. Yes, we are in the middle of negotiations, but we are not going to comment on that just yet, said Jennifer Huckstep, vice president of Local 751. A union website for the UAW locals in Illinois said the contract with Caterpillar expires midnight, February 28th, and the union will ask members for a strike vote to ramp up pressure on the company negotiators to search for a settlement. The union emphasized that it is negotiating tactic and is part of the process to move discussions along. A strike vote is both a show of confidence in the union, bargaining team, and first salvo toward management that union members are united as they head into negotiations, the union said on its website. The ramping up doesn't stop here. The real pressure on management comes when the bargaining team sets a strike deadline. But Caterpillar's ongoing financial struggle in the grip of a downturn that has dragged on for 4 years sets an uncertain background to talks with the union locals. Thursday's fourth quarter 2016 sales and revenue numbers came in at $9.6 billion, off from the $11 billion in the 2015 fourth quarter. Caterpillar's resource industry segment, which cover its Decatur operations, swung to a quarterly loss of $711 million, deteriorating by a staggering margin of more than 700% from its losses in the 2015 fourth quarter. Overall, the company-wide for the 3 months ended December 31st, Caterpillar lost $2 per share or $1.17 per million, $1.17 billion compared to a loss of $94 million or 16 cents per share a year earlier. But there is more to this story. Profits in 2016 were hammered by painful adjustments to pension and other post-employment benefits that cost $985 million, the loss primarily dragged down by lower interest rates. A goodwill impairment loss involving the company's surface mining and technology reporting unit, part of the resource industry segment, which includes Decatur Built Trucks, caused its fair trade to be downgraded by a non-cash charge of $595 million. The charge reflects the company's belief that future earnings will be compromised by a persistent downturn in orders related to the mining business. Restructuring costs for the 2016 also came in at more than $1 billion, primarily linked to layoffs in resource industry and Caterpillar's energy and transportation segments. One round of restructuring that is actually set to help employment prospects at the Decatur plant is the potential closure of the manufacturing plant in Aurora, which could ship 500 jobs Decatur's way. Aurora is involved in large wheel loader and compactor production, and Caterpillar had said its Decatur workforce is capable of handling the extra work. Looking back at Caterpillar's overall numbers and leaving aside the impairment, pension and restructuring costs, the company's profit picture looks much better. Profit per share would then be 83 cents for the last fourth quarter, the same as the fourth quarter for 2015. That 83 cent number easily beat the industry analysis expectations of 65 cents per share. Taking all four quarters of 2016 as a whole, Caterpillar said sales and revenues hit $38.5 billion, off 18% from the $47 billion achieved in 2015. That worked out at a loss of 11 cents per share, contrasting starkly with a $4.18 per share profit per share at the end of 2015. Given this swirl of financial information, much of it bad news, Caterpillar's attitude in bargaining negotiations with the Decatur UAW local and other union locals in Illinois is unknown. But, as noted earlier, the company paints a very grim picture of the resource industries segment. Sales for the fourth quarter of 2016 came in at a $1.443 billion, down 23% from the $1.878 billion at this time last year. Operating profit dropped down a mine shaft, swinging to a loss of $711 million compared to a loss in 2015 fourth quarter of $80 million, a 789% plunge. One chink of light at the end of the mine shaft is that Caterpillar thinks the drop in mining-related orders may have bottomed, but it still expects miners' capital spending in 2017 to be flat. Looking back on a 2016 Caterpillar won't be sorry to close the books on, Jim Umpleby, the firm's new CEO, said. Our results for the fourth quarter, while slightly better than expected, continue to reflect pressure in many of our end markets from weak economic conditions around much of the world. Our team did a great job in the quarter, as they have all year, aligning our cost structure with current demand while preserving capacity for the future. He said Caterpillar's focus on cost controls was a way to go, but lowered sales and revenues guidance for 2017. That is now predicted at a range of $36 billion to $39 billion, with a midpoint of $37.5 billion, compared to previous guidance, which suggested a midpoint of $38 billion. Caterpillar is predicting profit share of $2.90 at the midpoint of the sales, and the revenues outlook for 2017, but in more bad news for its workers, that profit is expected to slump to $2.30 per share at the midpoint once restructuring and layoff costs of some $500 million are factored. Caterpillar watcher Jim Minton, an investment advisor with Investment Planners Incorporated Indicator, said stockholders have been enjoying a company share price cruising close to $100 per share. He said Caterpillar has ridden an uptrend on speculation that President Donald Trump will ramp up rebuilding America's crumbling infrastructure and use cat gear to do it. The reality is it is going to take a few years for that to actually factor into profits, and the scale might be a little bit exaggerated, he added. Minton said, there are other positive signs, such as prices for commodities, such as copper findings, a bottom after 5 years in the doldrums, but Caterpillar needs to see some increased sales. It's really hard to run a business when your revenue keep going lower, and the future is brighter, but a great deal of that is built on the stock price, he said. One resource definitely trending lower in Caterpillar's workforce between the fourth quarter of 2015 and the fourth quarter of 2016, the number of company employees worldwide fell to 106,400, a loss of 12,300, with 7,700 of those jobs being cut in the United States. The workers that survive, if they are executives, can expect a more prosperous 2017. The company says it expects short-term incentive compensation to hit $750 million this year compared to the $250 million paid out in 2016. The next article, Councilman Bill Faber mourns loss of Star Horse, by Chris Lisvardi, Indicator. Bill Faber is looking back with fond memories of Senorita, a horse that became known to the community through promotions for his law firm as he ran for Decatur City Council. Senorita lived to be 32 years old before passing away during the summer, said Faber, who was elected to the council in 2015. It's been tough for Faber to lose a close companion he spent so much time with for over a decade. Senorita was with Faber outside the Decatur Civic Center in 2014 before he went in to file nominating petitions to enter the council race. We've had a long relationship, Faber said. Horses are a part of my life and who I am. Through the promotions with his horse, Faber said he was looking for ways to stand apart. His plan seemed to work, as he came in second with 5,830 votes in the 2015 election. During their time together, Senorita, an Appaloosa male, became one great friend of a lifetime for Faber. Appaloosa is the oldest breed of horse in North America. Faber said Senorita was a very brave trail horse, which made a difference when they were out riding and would come up against unexpected distractions such as dogs, hawks, and other animals. She was bold and confident, as good as it gets, Faber said. She was one of the best trained horses. Senorita was born in New Mexico before moving to Texas and was shown in halter classes and placed as a champion several times. She later moved to Decatur, where Faber bought her from Diane and Rick Rushing. Although Senorita will be hard to replace, Faber said he has a new horse named Zorro, whom he will be looking to introduce to the community in future ways. Faber said community members have been warm in their reception toward him, as the horses have touched a genuine chord. Faber said Zorro is about ready to make his debut and approves of the plan. Faber said he was half serious when asking Zorro to be on television with him. He said Zorro nodded his head in an apparent sign of approval. And here are a few local briefs for today, Friday, January 28th, in Decatur. Hospitality Careers, the Adult Education and Training Center will hold registration for Introduction to Hospitality Careers course 9 o'clock a.m. Monday and Tuesday, January 30th and the 31st. The center is located at 300 East El Dorado Street. Use the entrance at the corner of Cerro Gordo and Franklin Streets. Classes will meet 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Thursday, February 1st through March 30th. Students will have job shadowing and career exploration experience and earn a food handler's certificate. You may call 217-424-3085. And also in Argenta, Old School Breakfast, the Friends of Argenta Breakfast will be 7:30 to 10 a.m. Saturday, the 28th of January, in the Old School at 275 North Kenwood Street. Biscuits, gravy, sausage patties, pancakes, egg casserole, and fruit cups are on the menu. Friends Clothes Closet, a thrift store located in the school, will be open during the breakfast. And Demographics Now in Forsyth. Training sessions will be offered for the Demographics Now reference tool that provides business and residential data. Introduction classes will be held at noon to 1:30 p.m. and 6 to 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, January 31st, along with advanced sessions noon to 1:30 p.m. and 6 to 7:30 p.m. Tuesday, February 28th in the Forsyth Public Library, 268 South Elmwood Street. Okay, that's the end of part one of the Decatur Herald and Review for Friday, January 27th. This has been Eileen. I'm going to take a brief break and I'll be right back. Thank you for listening.